helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. William Pitt the Younger once said, "Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves." Now let's look at what the Biden administration has been doing because they think it's necessary. Not because it's legal, not even because it's constitutional, but simply because they say it is necessary. And let's not forget those in Congress and the media class who keep calling for the infringement of our rights. Tell me this isn't the argument of tyrants, both in the Oval Office, in the bureaucracy, in academia, and in the media. See, what really concerns me, though, is the reaction of the American people. There have always been tyrants in America, people who would make sure to, quote-unquote, never let a crisis go to waste. But more and more, it appears the American people are willing to submit to these illegal and immoral actions under the guise of it being necessary. Does the devotion to the creed of necessity show that many Americans have become enslaved to the tyrants in our society? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel. You've joined us here at the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm so glad you could join me today because we are talking about the tyranny of necessity and where that is sending us. And hopefully, by the end of this program, you'll find out that you don't have to be a slave to the tyrant, but you will have to stand up if you want to be free. For example, ever since the Dobbs decision overturning both Roe and Casey was announced, there have been numerous calls for President Biden to simply declare a public health emergency because women couldn't kill babies in the womb. Now, I know there's a lot of calls about, you know, my body, my choice, and quote-unquote reproductive health care, but all that the court said was, listen, this decision is not in the federal Constitution. It is not in the a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution of the United States. It belongs to the people and their representatives, which drove the abortion tyrants crazy. You're telling me that we cannot demand and force states comply with our belief that abortion at any time, any place, anywhere, for any reason must be required. And the fact that that's not available is now considered a public health emergency. Well, sure it is, because they're not getting their way. And when a tyrant doesn't get their way, they kick back. And if what it takes is a declaration of an emergency, quote unquote, in order to get their way, in order to force the American people to comply with their view of the world, well, so be it. The ends justify the means. I mean, it's not like the federal government hasn't used this state of emergency in the past. They used it for COVID. They used it after the 9/11 attacks. They've used it. We've been under a state of emergency, according to the federal government, since 2001. Why would this be any different? So sure, Biden's considering declaring a public health emergency, not because there's any real emergency, not even because he has the legal authority to declare an emergency. Remember, the Constitution does not grant to the United States the power to declare an emergency. There are no, quote unquote, emergency powers in the Constitution of the United States. There's no ability to simply throw aside the Constitution and laws of the United States because, well, some president says there's an emergency. That is not a constitutional republic. That is a dictatorship, which is exactly what America is becoming very, very quickly. Like so much of history, it's taking a slow, deliberate progression. You get to a turning point, and voila, America has turned from a constitutional republic into a dictatorship, into an oligarchy. And this recent example with Biden's abortion executive order is just, again, the latest example of a White House, of a presidency acting like a king rather than the president, and the states acting as vassals rather than states, acting like colonies rather than states. Now, I have seen a lot of misinformation out about what the executive order actually says. I've talked about it already. I've reviewed it in the last couple of days on this program. But remember, it's to get the executive branch, the bureaucracy of the nation, to determine how to promote and ensure that people can get abortions, even if it's illegal in the state. In fact, they want to use your tax dollars to promote abortions. That's right. They want to use your tax dollars to promote the taking of human life. Now, I find it ironic to the point of humor, if it wasn't so awful, that so many of the people promoting this idea of a dictatorial top-down enforcement of abortion are members of what can only now be euphemistically called the Democratic Party. Because remember, what did the court say? The court said this is not a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. It is not a right protected by our history or tradition until the court came up with it out of thin air in 1973. Therefore, this power belongs to the people and their elected representatives. Let the quote-unquote democratic process work. Let the people decide for themselves what to do about this, how to regulate abortions and the abortion industry. But you see, that's not good enough for the tyrants. Now it's a necessity, because after 50 years of a court-imposed, it's not really a right. They claimed it was a right, but you have a court-imposed dictum that says you cannot criminalize abortion throughout the country based on no law, based on no history, based on no tradition. They made it up out of thin air. Actually, they made it up out of political posturing. And now that that's gone, it's a necessity that they get it back. So I want to understand why. What is it about abortion that these people find so necessary? I mean, they talk about, you know, a woman's right to choose and women's health care. This has nothing to do with health care. With extremely rare exceptions, an abortion is not medically necessary. And in those rare exceptions, guess what? The laws in every state I'm aware of say, yes, you can, you know, if it's medically necessary, if it involves the life and physical health of the mother, then we will not criminalize abortions in those situations. That is a medical decision. We're not talking about medical decisions. And for the vast majority of abortions, we're talking about convenience. People who don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Now, this may offend some people, and if you have sensitive ears, maybe you want to turn away for a few seconds, but the logical consequence of sexual intercourse among a heterosexual couple is pregnancy. Now, I'm sorry, there are a lot of people who don't want to hear that. Now, we have systems. We have ways of minimizing it. We have ways of preventing it, but it is a logical consequence. As logical as stepping off of the top of a building, the logical consequence is you fall. The logical consequence of tripping over something in the yard is you fall. The logical consequence of hitting your thumb with a hammer is it's going to hurt. But you see, they don't want those consequences. Now, I could get into a lot of philosophies and questions about the promotion and where abortions are promoted and where the people put these abortion clinics. But what we're talking about is for this progressive class, this that includes, by the way, the Democratic Party, many Republicans. It includes, and remember, the progressive movement started under a Republican president, was started by a Republican president, Teddy Roosevelt. But in academia, in the media, this whole progressive movement needs abortion. Why? I mean, if you are a movement, wouldn't you need people to follow you? Meaning, wouldn't you want people that agree with you to have children that they would raise up to further the movement? Why do they find it necessary to be able to kill human children just because they're not in the womb? Now, I'm not a psychologist, and I have my own theories and opinions, but I want you to think about this. I want you to consider, why does the progressive movement find it necessary for there to be abortion, to the point of this apoplectic reaction to the possibility that not every state will allow abortions in all situations? And what I'd like you to do me a favor, comment. Either go to my website, constitutionstudy.com, and let's talk about it there, or comment on this page. This program will go to podcast in a couple of days, and it'll appear on the website on americaonline.com. You can just search for, go under shows and search for Constitution Study. Comment. I'd love to hear what you think is the reason why the progressive movement finds it necessary to have abortions. Literally to the point of, according to the Biden administration, the Department of Health and Human Services, saying that hospitals must provide abortions in emergency situations. Well, duh, that is the law today. Why is the Biden administration pushing this? Because remember, every state, and by the way, if you're in a state or you know of a state that this is not the law, again, comment, let me know. I'd love to share that information. But as far as I understand, every state in the union and the District of Columbia allows abortions in the case of a medical emergency, meaning the life of the mother is at risk. Most of them, if not all of them, allow for the physical health of the mother to be an emergency situation allowing abortions. No, this is about scaring people. This is about promoting the agenda to show you how necessary it is to have a nationwide policy on abortion because, well, hey, some state might deny this. All right, time. Let's think about this for just a quick second. If a state says you cannot provide medical attention when the mother's life is in danger, that's already probably unconstitutional under the state's constitution. It certainly is a violation of the 14th Amendment. You could look at it either as a equal protection of the law or depriving somebody the liberty to get necessary medical care. These are possibilities, but that's not happening. It's meant to, again, I believe it's meant to scare people into believing that women are going to die because we do not have this national standard about how we're going to regulate the abortion procedure, right? If you look at it as a medical procedure, how we regulate all sorts of medical procedures, how are we going to regulate the medical procedure? Let's the people decide through their representatives at the state level. Now, there are some people, I look at this and it's like, these people must be bat guano crazy. And one of them, by the way, is Elizabeth Warren. Now, again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not saying she's clinically crazy. She's clinically psychopathic. I'm saying what comes out of her mouth shows that she's just nuts. Her mind doesn't deal with reality. See, she wants the federal government to shut down crisis pregnancy centers, even while those sessions are being vandalized by pro-abortion groups. She wants them shut down. Pro-abortion groups are committing arson and vandalism. She wants them shut down. Why? Well, she claims the centers, quote unquote, fool women into carrying their pregnancies. Excuse me? Crisis pregnancy center. Okay, you're pregnant, you're in a crisis, you go there. How does it fool them to not get an abortion? Wouldn't it be really easy to just go in and say, hey, I want an abortion. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't do that here. Oh, okay. Does Elizabeth Warren really think women are so incapable of making decisions for themselves, they don't realize when they walk into a pregnancy center that does not offer an abortion, they're not getting an abortion there? She actually claims it is they torture women into carrying their pregnancies. I want to know where this woman lives, because it certainly isn't on planet Earth. And she lamented that pregnancy centers outnumber abortion clinics 3-1. You mean that you can actually get assistance if you are pregnant and you want help and you may not want an abortion? You can get help? How dare you? She wants all these women to go to abortion clinics. You see, she doesn't want you to have a choice of doing something. She claims you're pro-choice. She doesn't want you to have a choice. She wants you to get an abortion. That's her necessity. That is the tyranny of her point of view. And she's using that to claim a necessity to shut down the competition because she doesn't want people with a crisis pregnancy to have the option, any option other than getting an abortion. Let me put it another way. In the case of an unplanned pregnancy, Elizabeth Warren's, the only solution she considers acceptable is child sacrifice. Now think about that for a minute. Well, I do have to head off to a break. Before I do, I have a special announcement for you. I have good news. See, Healthy Cell has an incredible offer. The entire month of July, all my listeners, new listeners, repeat listeners, you can get 50% off their immune super boost. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud and use the code America50. That's America50, and you'll get 50% off your immune super boost. So again, go to healthycell.com/outloud. Let them know you listen on America Out Loud and put any package together, but use the code America50 and they will give you 50% off your immune super boost in that order. But please hang around for a few minutes. We'll be back right after this break.
Many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. My name is Paul Engel. We are reading and studying the Constitution, teaching the rising generation to be free. And today, we're actually talking about the tyranny of necessity. Now, there's been a lot of things done in the name of necessity it's really starting to bite us in the backside. See, for years, for decades now, the Congress has simply written frameworks for law and handed it over to the federal, to the bureaucracy, the executive branch, out of quote-unquote necessity. We've allowed the president to make outrageous, illegal, unconstitutional acts, all in the name of necessity. And now we live in what is arguably no longer a republic. Arguably, the American country is if not already, it's in the process of morphing from a republic to a dictatorship, where the president can simply issue new rules and change not just the operation of the of his branch of government, but change the English language, change the laws of the United States and the English language simply with a stroke of a pen. See, the Biden Department of Education is proposing new regulations to modify actual legislation. See, back in 1972, Congress passed what became part known as Title IX. They have education amendments. And what they did is they said, if you receive federal funding, then you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. And the idea was simple, right? You couldn't have male-only sports. There's a lot of things behind it, but one is you couldn't have male-only sports without allowing women-only sports. Because in most physical endeavors, men have a biological advantage. And this stood for what? We're talking almost 50 years now, right? Sex, which is a biological fact. Well, now they simply want to rewrite the rules. They want to effectively rewrite the law to add, not, you know, sex stereotypes, sex characteristics, pregnancy or related conditions, sexual orientation, and gender identity. So let's start with at the beginning, right? First of all, Congress said it was necessary for the federal government to give money to schools. Now, it's not constitutional. It's not legal. It is a violation of the Constitution, a violation of the law. But Congress said it was necessary. It is necessary because it's unfair that, you know, certain states could do one thing and other states. So Congress said it is unfair. It is necessary that we provide funding. And then, of course, they said, well, since we provide the funding, it is necessary that we tell you what you can do with that funding. Now, in 1972, they said it is necessary that you not discriminate based on sex. Now, I don't believe we should be discriminating based on sex. But I recognize the Constitution does not give that power to the United States except when it comes to voting. With the exception of voting, Congress doesn't have the legal authority, their power to make necessary and proper legislation is limited to the powers delegated to the United States. They don't have the legal authority to tax in order to fund education. They don't have the legal authority to tell you, to tell that schools that they cannot quote-unquote discriminate based on sex, to determine what discrimination is. And they sure as heck don't have the legal language to effectively rewrite the law and say, when they said sex, when Congress said sex, they meant sex, sex characteristics, gender identity. They are rewriting, effectively rewriting the law. Congress isn't doing it. It's the Department of Education, a department that does not legally exist. Why? Well, since regulating education is not a power delegated to the United States, the legislation that created the Department of Education is invalid. No, that's not my words. It's the Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison. It was Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Papers 78. An act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is invalid. It is void. No legislative act contrary to the Constitution can be valid. Since they said, oh, but we have to do this, America, because it's necessary, we opened the Pandora's box. We now allow the Department of Education to effectively rewrite the English language, rewrite laws. These are not laws. This isn't a republic. This isn't where the people vest their power in legislators, representatives elected by them. See, remember, the people don't elect the president. The states elect the president. And we elect him with certain limited powers. Read Article 2. There is actually not much the president can legally do without Congress. Yeah, he can receive ambassadors. He can issue pardons. He can call a special meeting of Congress. He can pardon. Most everything else is either administrative or something has to do with Congress. See, we've allowed necessity to turn America from a republic into an oligarchy, where a few people, the president, the bureaucrats, the courts, rule over us because we allowed it to happen, because we listened when the tyrants claimed it is necessary. And as slaves, we agreed with it. And of course, this latest executive order is just the latest example in a long line of executive orders where the federal government, where the president or his bureaucracy is simply ruling as if they are kings. Well, for example, back in March of 2021, Biden signed an executive order encouraging the agencies to get involved with voter registration and voter turnout. He actually wants them to campaign, just not for specific candidates. Now understand, there is no federal voter registration because there is one and only one federal election. That's when the presidential electors vote for president. Even that is iffy, right? It's all when they get counted. Every election is a state election. There is no legal federal voter registration because you never vote in an election run by the federal government. But you see, he doesn't care because he thinks it's necessary to get people to register, to actually show up and vote. Now, should people register? Should people turn out and vote? Yeah, I generally would agree with that statement. I would say I would be more interested in people voting, vetting who they vote for. But the point is, not only is it not the authority of the federal government to do that, it certainly is not the authority of the president of the United States to have federal agencies using your tax dollars to do this. This is what happens when we let necessity overrule common sense, overrule the law. Oh, well, you know, it's important, so we'll get the president to do that. That's not the act of a president. That's the act of a king. Or back in June, President Biden, quote unquote, declared an emergency. Excuse me, he has no authority to declare. And what does he determine is an emergency? Well, he ordered the Department of Commerce to basically throw out all the duties on solar panels from certain Southeast Asian states, countries, you know, Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam. No, we don't bother with the law. See, Congress passed a law that imposed duties on certain things coming in from these countries. President just said, nah, I don't like them. Go away. Because in his mind, it's necessary. And all he has to do is say, oh, I'm declaring an emergency, which means Congress doesn't matter anymore. I'm declaring an emergency. The Constitution doesn't matter anymore. All I have to do, I have a pen, I have a phone. I'm just going to say, it's an emergency. Do whatever I want. That's not a president, ladies and gentlemen. That's a king. That's a despotic tyrant. That's exactly the actions we declared independence from 246 years ago. It's the exact actions we complained about King George that led us to declare our independence. And we have it right here in Washington, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The President of the United States is acting just like King George, the despotic tyrant that led us to declare independence. And the American people say, well, we have to do it. It's necessary. See, in a statement, Secretary of Commerce Raimondo said, I remain committed to upholding our trade laws and ensuring American workers have a chance to compete on a level playing field. Well, I'm sorry, Secretary Raimondo, your boss just ordered you to ignore trade laws. Hello? See, Congress has the authority to set duties, not the president. You'll uphold the law until your boss says no more. Now, whether you think these duties against solar panels from these countries are a good thing or a bad thing, the question is, who decides? Who runs this country? Is it we the people, or is it a bunch of oligarchs currently residing in Washington, D.C.? Now, it's not just those in government. Remember, it seems to me that we are dealing with a political structure beyond, above government. You have this progressive movement, which includes not only the Democratic Party, large parts of the Republican Party, media, academia, high-tech companies. Well, for example, billionaire Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, had an interesting point to make. He issued a press release back in June where he said 2/3 of adults worldwide now can make or receive a digital payment, with a share in developing countries growing from 35% in 2014 to 57% in 2021. Now, this is interesting. This is the whole idea of cryptocurrency, digital currency, right? There is a distinction. But the idea of using digital payments, that could be everything from, Apple Pay, Google Pay on your phone, to actually using something like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a situational thing. I admit sometimes I use Apple Pay. I don't currently use cryptocurrencies, not because I have anything so much against cryptocurrencies themselves. It's right now they are way too volatile to be a safe method of payment. They take too long. They're too volatile. But that's okay. See, here's the problem I run into, though. See, in this press release, Mr. Gates said, by investing in digital public infrastructure and technologies for payment and ID systems and updating regulations to foster innovation and protect consumers, governments can build on the progress reported in the Findex and expand access to financial services for all who need them. See, he says, we need to have digital payments and digital IDs because it's necessary to give people access to more services. Okay, then what? See, when somebody says something is necessary, there are two questions you should ask. Is it legal? Then what? See, the question is, Congress has the constitutional authority to coin money. By the way, coin here doesn't mean little discs of metal. It means the ability to make money, to create money. They have the authority to coin money and to regulate the value thereof. It doesn't say only cash. It doesn't say, dollar bills versus coins versus, pick whatever you want. So the question isn't, can Congress create a digital currency? Sure. Can Congress create a national digital ID system? Questionable. Where is Congress given the authority? Where's the United States given the authority to create an ID system? Doesn't exist that I've seen. But the then what should show up? See, cast your mind back just a few years, about what, 5-6 years, when President Obama said, you know what, we're going to use our bureaucracy to encourage banks and credit card companies to not do business with certain entities we don't like. Gun stores were best known, but there were others, right? If you were a pro-life or a conservative organization, well, there was pressure applied to get the banks to not do business with you. You still see it today in the marijuana market, where many states have legalized marijuana, the sale of marijuana under certain circumstances, but because the federal government doesn't like that, because they still consider it a federal crime, even though the legislation that made it a federal crime doesn't legally exist. These companies can't use banks because the banks are being regulated by the federal government. Again, something illegal for the most part. What happens when every transaction you commit is regulated by the federal government? What happens when you show up with your little government-issued ID, your government-listed pay app, and you swipe whatever it is, you scan whatever it is, and the system says, I'm sorry, we can't approve this purchase. Now, everybody can say, hey, all of a sudden you go to a gun store and says, I'm sorry, we can't approve this purchase. You've purchased too many guns. That's the obvious. But take it a little farther. Oh, you can't buy, you've bought too much gasoline. We need to get away from fossil fuels. Or, you know what? You've bought too much fast food. It's not good for your health. And under the Affordable Care Act, we want to regulate your health. See, my issue isn't with the concept of a digital infrastructure. My problem is when you turn over your ability to pay for things to another party, you are enslaved by their decisions. I don't think this should be a public thing. I don't think this should be a private thing. Yes, I use credit cards at my discretion. And you know what? If the credit card companies are stupid, I either find another credit card company or I figure out how to do it in cash or I send a check. Oh, if I can't find a bank that'll do business with me, I'll deal with cash. But you see, while credit card companies and banks can eventually feel the pain of customers walking away, the federal government never does. The federal government never pays a price for its bad actions. So we cannot allow it to be in control of our transactions. Because sure as shooting, somebody will say, it is necessary that we regulate what the people buy. And sadly, way too many Americans will sit by and let it happen. Now, I have to take another break. Before I do, please do me a favor. Take some time every day. Head to AmericaOutloud.com. Check out the news, the happenings. Hey, you can even get the little notifications from the website. See, find the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos that speak to you and that speak to the state of our nation and share them. Share them with friends, family, social media. Join the movement. Join the Americans that are trying to not only secure the blessings of liberty, but to share it with our family, our friends, and our neighbors. So help restore the Republic by sharing this information, and then join me after this quick break.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about the necessity, the tyranny that comes from necessity. Including, by the way, the necessity I keep hearing of voting for the lesser of two evils, the two-party system. So Washington warned us way back in 1796 in his farewell address that the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge and natural to party dissension, is its own frightful despotism. But he went on, he said, the disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual. And sooner or later, the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than its competitors, turns this disposition to the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. Ladies and gentlemen, we've elevated the office of president into the office of king. See, we want to point the finger and blame the person in the office. We, the people, allowed the president to become more like a king. Because when they started acting like that, when they claimed it was necessary to assume these powers, we sat back and let it happen. And now we're reaping the consequences. Just take a look at the gas prices. How much are you paying for gasoline nowadays? Now, there are several things that are part of it. Part of it was the necessity of the federal government to regulate things like oil drilling, oil pipelines, refineries, and all that. See, we decided it was the government, the federal government said it was necessary that we do this, and we let them do it. And now we have put this power in the hands of an idiot. See, first, President Biden blamed Putin and the war in Ukraine for the hike in gas prices. Now, that was obviously part of it. But you have to understand, from the time President Biden took office until the time the war in Ukraine started, gasoline had already gone up $1.14 a gallon. So yes, part of that increase can certainly be attributed to Russia, but also to the closing down of pipelines, the shutting down of the Keystone XL pipeline, the shutting down and the failure to issue leases, gas and drilling leases on federal property and offshore. All of these contribute. So what is the solution come up by our dear leader? He said, my message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product, and do it now. Okay, dear imbecile, the price at the pump does reflect the cost they are paying. See, if you actually bothered to look at the economics of a gas station, do you know why most gas stations have convenience stores attached? Because they don't make much money off of the gasoline. I think the average profit margin on a gallon of gasoline sold at the pump is 2%. So at $4 a gallon, that means the owner of that business, the owner, that mom and pop shop, by the way, they're almost all of them are mom and pop, or I should say a large percentage are mom and pop shops. Very few are actually owned by gas and oil and gas companies. So at $4 a gallon at 2% profit margin means they make about 8 cents a gallon. The federal government makes more money from a gallon of gas than these people do, but this idiot, and I'm sorry, I really don't like using it. I have no other way to describe this. This is buffoonery on an unimaginable level. You've done everything you can, Mr. President, to get rid of gasoline, to get rid of fossil fuels. You've stated as much. And now you're asking these companies to pay for your mistakes. You shut down the pipelines. You shut down the drilling. You and your administration turned America from an oil exporter to an oil importer in less than a year. And now you want the poor middle-class mom and pop gas station to take it on the chin so that you don't look bad. That, ladies and gentlemen, is evil. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the equivalent of Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake. Now, here's the sad part. Claims of necessity do not change reality. I know this is very hard for the progressives to understand, but the universe does not rearrange itself based on your feelings. So in the middle of these gas price hikes, by the way, in large part created by the Biden administration policies, by government policies, not just Biden administration, by the way, but he has a lot to do with it. These very high gas prices that are impacting the American people. What is President Biden's solution to this? Well, it's to release oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve. Now understand, the Strategic Oil Reserve is there, as the name says, for strategic reasons. Like if we go to war, like if there's a national disruption, an international disruption of oil or manufacturing. It's there for strategic purposes, not to bail a president out of a bad political situation. But it has been used this way for decades, basically since we created it back in the 1970s. Now, the fact that the amount of oil being released from the reserve is a fraction of what this nation uses every day didn't matter. The fact that it's going to have little, if any, impact on the actual price of pump doesn't matter. It looks good. And Biden thought it was necessary that they look good. Well, it was just revealed that more than 5 million barrels of that oil was sent overseas. In fact, it was sent to a Chinese company that has ties to Hunter Biden. And of course, this has been, you know, people have been going apoplectic over this. Well, okay, maybe there's something to do with Hunter Biden. I don't know. There's claims that, you know, that, oh, yes, it was, you know, he used to be involved. He's not involved now. That may be worthy of investigation to see if this was used to profit the Biden family. But the fact that it came from the emergency reserves, I want you to think about this for a second. Oil, crude oil, does you no good. You cannot run your car on it. You cannot heat your home with it. It cannot generate electricity to use in your electric vehicle that you can't afford to buy anyway. It must be refined, right? So why, if we take the Hunter Biden part out of this, because this isn't the only place that this oil is being sold, as I understand it. So if we set aside the Hunter Biden, why is oil from America's Strategic Oil Reserve being sent overseas in the first place? Because America does not have the refining capacity to refine it ourselves. There has not been an oil refinery built in the United States for something on 40 years. 40 years. Those refineries are running between 96 and 98% of capacity. I've even heard reports that several refineries have postponed maintenance because were they to go offline to perform needed maintenance, there would not be enough gasoline in the system to keep things going until they could come back online. So why are these refineries running right up to the limit? Well, because we have not built a refinery in this country in 40 years. Now, I want to inform you, President Biden was not president 40 years ago, meaning this is not a President Biden problem. This is the necessity of allowing the federal government to regulate something that's not authorized by the Constitution. Oil, energy, power, they are not a power. Regulating them is not a power delegated to the United States. The sale of that across state lines is, but not the creation of it, not the processing of it. That is not a power delegated to the United States. But you see, we allowed the federal government to say it is necessary that we do this because we can do it better than anyone else. We have to do this. It's a necessity. We need to be the tyrants. And because of their regulations, there's a reason why these refineries are not being built. And when refineries shut down, they're not being replaced. Because it's too bloody expensive. The regulation is too difficult, too expensive to make it profitable. Paul, you used the profit word. Yes. Trust me, you're not going to do it just for grins and giggles. You do it to make a profit. And the necessity of allowing the federal government to become the tyrant over our energy policy has led us to the point where even if we could get more oil, even if we could pump more oil, even if we could get it in through pipelines, we don't have the refining capacity to turn it into something useful. See, that's what happens when you let necessity override the law. It always ends up turning people into tyrants and biting you right in the backside. So we're not only dealing with the price of oil, but inflation as a whole is out of control. It is. I'm reminded of the 1970s and early 80s. I lived through the stagflation. I lived through the misery index. I lived through the malaise. And I'm reminded of that as I see the world around us today. So what is the necessary response? What are our governments going to do about this? The answer is bribe you. See, some states are considering inflation relief checks. They're going to send you checks or tax rebates or something. They're going to give you money because they want to cover the soaring prices. They say, oh, well, you know, if things are more expensive, we just give you a little bit of money, that will be fine. Now, I want you to think about that. That's like saying, you know, okay, your grocery bill is going from $100 to $200 a month, but we're going to send you, a $50 check, and that'll be fine. Well, for example, California is touting some legislation. They're going to send out $9.5 billion in tax refunds, well, to help address the inflation. Now, let me ask you something. Does California budget have a $9.5 billion surplus? I don't think so. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe not. Indiana is going to spend $1 billion. It's going to send tax refunds to their to the people there. Colorado's issuing $750 cash rebate checks. While Maine is doling out $850 in relief checks to residents. But have they ever thought, is there any downside to all of this profligate spending? Well, let's start right off the beginning. The most obvious thing is, if these states are not running a sufficient budget surplus to cover these tax rebates and these tax checks, that means they're going to have to borrow money, which means they're going to have to pay interest on that money at a time when interest rates are, well, poised to increase greatly over a short period of time. So that $500, $700, $800 check you may get from the state may cost you a couple grand in taxes to pay off the loan. But there's more. You see, the reason we have inflation is we have more dollars in the system than we have products and economic activity to consume it. In other words, if you have more dollars facing fewer products, the value of the dollar goes down, meaning you have inflation, which is exactly the reason these people are pushing more money out into the market. I saw something from AI tax preparation, and they gave an example. It says, imagine everyone woke up this morning with $1 million in their bank account. You know what would happen? The prices of everything would go up. Milk would be $500 a gallon. Cereal, $300 a box. That's inflation 101. That's how this works. So these tax checks, which I'm sure somebody in Washington, D.C. is proposing at the federal level, they don't mitigate the issues of inflation. They make them worse. It's a short-term fix to a long-term, really bad outcome. So what can the American people do? What can we do? Well, the answer is simple. Stop listening to the necessities. If someone says this is necessary, assume they're a tyrant. Assume William Pitt the Younger is correct. If you say this is necessary, they're probably a tyrant. Take responsibility for the mistakes we have already made and learn to deal with it. There are solutions to the gas prices. There are solutions to climate change. There are solutions to inflation. There are solutions to a lot of these things. But the solution has never been to empower government to rule over our lives. As we come up to the election in November, it is more important than ever that we vet our candidates, not based on the goodies they promise, not based on the bribes they're going to give us, but on their fidelity to the Constitution of the United States. Because all of this power given to government because they said it was necessary is what is biting us in the backside. And while it's not a quick solution or a sexy solution or a joyous solution, rolling back that power, taking responsibility for yourselves, helping your neighbors is the true solution to the tyranny of the necessity. It is the true way that America remains the land of the free and the home of the brave. That we remain a constitutional republic where the rule of law outweighs the rule of man. Now, please join us in this work. Share this program with others. Remind them, let them know. Weekdays at 4 p.m. on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network, they can listen to the Constitution Study. They can listen on our media player, our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. They can also find the podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcasts, anywhere they get podcasts. Do me a favor, share these links. You can find them on AmericaOutLoud.com. Help other people find the Constitution Study so that we can all do our work to share the blessings of liberty from sea to shining sea.